Good afternoon. It's for us a little bit of history today. 27 and a half years ago, almost to the day, I started business radio in South Africa. Those days you had to do a deal with a distributor, and our first distributor was the SABC. Then we went to 702, and then we bought a big stake in Classic FM, turned that around, back to the SABC. Whew, it was quite a journey. Today, we have our own distribution channel, which you're listening to now. More than 300,000 people who engage with BizNews in various ways through YouTube, X or Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. And that's what we're doing today, is bringing you a brand new BizNews briefing every evening from 5 o'clock. And how does it work? Well, here's how the show goes. I'll give you an introduction in just a moment on what's coming up in the next half hour or so. And then some of the major business news points that have occurred today. So it's a daily show. We then move on to our market commentator for the day. And you can get the full interview of that on biznews.com, BizNews Radio, BizNews TV. But we'll be bringing you a compressed package of that. And then a little bit of news, both from our own journalists and from our partners at the Financial Times and Bloomberg. So we've got a lot of sources of fascinating business information for you. In between all of that, I'll bring you up to date, or rather at the end of the program, because it gives the JSE time to compile everything on its own indices, etc. I'll bring you up to date with how the markets as a whole have performed. But let's start off with the business headlines that we have today. And well, there were two big companies that reported their financial results. The JSE listed document management company Metrofile reported a 22% drop in operating profit on same as before sales for the year to end June. A final dividend of 7 cents a share has been declared. That cuts the year's payout by a fifth to 14 cents a share. The company says it expects trading conditions to remain challenging throughout 2025, but says strategic initiatives are set to support financial recovery with the closure of its operation of Tidy Files, which is expected to improve group margins. For 2025, it aims to generate positive free cash flow and focus on reducing debt. David Shapiro was the very first market commentator back in 1997 when we introduced business radio to South Africa. So not surprisingly, he's the man that I asked to help me through today. And here's his view on Metrofile.
I know Metrofile very much. It's part of SavVest. It goes back to the, you know, to the late 80s. One of the issues there is we're starting to see volumes fall. Maybe their technology has fallen behind. I thought they'd keep up, but it's also an indication of a slowing down of business.
Yeah, indeed it is. Another big company that reported today is African Rainbow Capital Investments, which owns 26% of data provider Rain, 19% of Challenger Bank Time, and 70% of one of our business partners' online logistics platform, Linebooker. ARC, or ARC Investments, reported a 21% jump in its intrinsic value in the year to end June. Now, that's what really matters in a company like this. It makes a lot of investments in various assets, and those assets it's hoping, as do all private equity or venture capital companies, are going to appreciate. And as far as it's concerned, the intrinsic value at ARC Investments was up 21% in the year to June. Share price edged higher today, R7.15. However, that's a 42% discount on that intrinsic value of the company of R12.38 a share. And that gives it a market value of just over 20 billion rand. The company is chaired by Patrice Motsepe and was co-founded by financial sector heavyweights Johan van Sail, who's now 68. He used to be the CEO of Sanlam, and Johan van der Merwe, who's 59 and previously of Investec Asset Management. That's why you'll hear David in just a moment referring to the two Johans. In the year, ARK Invest raised 750 million rands from shareholders. It used 100 million of this to buy back its own shares and invested an additional 169 million into Time and 126 million into Rain. Here's David's view on ARK Invest.
The underlying businesses are very good, Alec, and they're frustrated because their intrinsic value doesn't match the share price. You know, in other words, it's a deep discount. And I think one of the reasons is that you're not quite sure what you're buying. You know, it's little bits of everything. I still think ARK has got to refine its portfolio that, you know, it's a couple of good businesses in there that attract investors and the discount will narrow.
So the share price actually edged up a little bit towards the close. I had it at 7 Rand 15. I see it's ended at 7 Rand 30. So up by 4.25%. Sasol has appointed Miss Muriel Dube, a member of its directorate since 2018, as the chairman of the board. She holds an MSc degree from Oxford University in environmental change and management and has served as the chief negotiator for the government of South Africa in climate change negotiations at the United Nations. So clearly, this is an indication of the direction that Sasol is focusing on. It needs to get its act together on environmental issues, particularly because of the impact that the CO2 emissions have on climate change. Ms. Dube was previously the chief commercial officer at Bidvest and has served on a number of South African company boards. Dr. Martina Fluel has been appointed the lead independent director. She's also been on the Sasol board since 2018. She's got a PhD in chemistry and was previously chief executive of Oxia. It's a chemical subsidiary of the Oman Oil Company. Well, some pretty good news came through last week and good enough for us to repeat it today. There has been much unhappiness amongst members of the BizNews community on the fact that Starlink is not available in South Africa. We know it from our own colleagues in Malawi who use Starlink, and it's as though they had the best internet connectivity that you could find in this country. It's that quick. Well, it does appear as though finally there is some breakthrough coming. The story that we heard, and which was widely circulated, was that Elon Musk, the owner of Starlink through his space company, SpaceX, was not interested in giving away 30% of the company to politically influential individuals, which is part of what tends to happen here when you get into the BEE regulations. But that, it appears, may now be, well, not so big an issue anymore. The president of South Africa, Cyril Ramaphosa, had this to say last week.
Having to do with Starlink. So I know about it I know about it.
Do you like Elon Musk?
let me say to you, I have had, Elon Musk is South African born American now. I have had discussions with him and have said, Elon, you've become so successful. And you are investing in a variety of countries. I want you to come home and invest here. So he and I are going to have a further discussion about a variety of things. Whatever one may think about him, he is a hugely successful business person. And having had those discussions with him, to advance the interests of South Africans, he runs widespread businesses. And in many ways, he's already invested in South Africa through his X online process, which used to be Twitter. So he's already present in our lives as South Africans. So I will be taking further discussions about how we can attract Elon Musk to come and invest here in South Africa.
And who's your hero?
Well, isn't that good news indeed? So on to our market commentary for the day. As mentioned earlier, David Shapiro was my sidekick for many years when we introduced business radio into South Africa. From Monday to Friday at 6 o'clock, the two of us would gather. No matter where he was, he would somehow make an opportunity to get into the studio. And those studios started the SABC. Then they moved to President Place. Then we moved to the upmarket area of Melrose Arch. And literally for 15 years, it was our privilege to share business news with South Africa on a variety of radio stations. So this being a whole new era for BizNews and a return, I guess you could call it, to my roots, who better than Uncle David? I can't really call him that because he sounds like he hasn't aged a day in the last 27 years. But who better than Dave Shapiro to give me the honor of his company today? He is South Africa's favorite stockbroker, and he is very, very bullish. Now, this is an interesting point because David has seen it all. He's been watching markets for over half a century. He's seen South Africa go through difficulties and times when nobody wanted shares listed on the JSE, to other times where things just went gangbusters and everybody wanted some of this country or a slice of this country. Right now, Mr. Shapiro is moving in very, very much the bullish direction. And that's so interesting because it confirms the message that we had at the BizNews conference on Thursday. But let's pick up with David.
Oh, we're going into a bull market. There's no doubt about that. Global bull market. I think what we forget, and I'm just giving a quick global perspective, we've had 4 years of very difficult markets in which interest rates globally have gone up dramatically. The only thing that kind of offset it or cushioned it was an event in November 22 when, with the release of ChatGPT, which put a different perspective on the market. But if it wasn't for the release of artificial intelligence, of the money that was spent there, we would have gone through 2.5-3 years of very difficult markets dragged down by high interest rates and the impact that it had not only on businesses but consumers. But what's happened now, that's been reversed. From probably Wednesday when the Fed meets to our meeting on Thursday, we're going to start a succession of interest rates which could go on right through to the end of 2025. And when rates come down, Alec, then markets go. So I think we're going into a very strong phase of equity markets and probably bond markets as well.
It's an interesting point you make there because over the long term, when interest rates start dropping is the time you should be owning shares.
Exactly. The reason is obvious because I think it's number one, confidence. You'll see that from once rates go down and confidence returns into an economy, mainly because people are getting more money in their back pocket, and they start to spend it. Also, companies are not dragged down by interest rates. I was looking at GrowthPoint results the other day. You know, when you're paying interest rates, it's almost impossible to make ends meet. But the prime rate's 11.75%. And it, no business can survive if you're borrowing money at those kind of levels. So we need rates to come down dramatically. You know, it's the same kind of thing in the United States where rates are, you know, over 5%. So it's very difficult for businesses to move forward. And therefore, when rates start coming down, it's a big driver of economic growth.
How confident are we that interest rates will be cut on Wednesday in the United States and then triggering similar cuts around the world?
It's not a debate of whether they will be cut. It's the rate at which they're going to be cut. The big debate, is it going to be 50 points? Is it going to be 25 points? And the camp that believes that the Fed has got a dual mandate, which is not only inflation, it's also employment. And the labor market in the U.S. is starting to feel the pressure. It's slowing down. And you don't want it to slow down too much, you know, that you bring about a recession. So you will find there are two camps, those who believe a 50 point necessary. It's almost 60% of views that it would be 50 points. The others is it could be 25 points. So whatever it is, it doesn't matter.
If it's 25 this meeting, it'll be another succession of 25 points right through to the end of 25, where the general view in the US is that rates could come down by as much as 2.25%, 225 basis points of that, which will make a huge difference to bending and confidence in the US. And we will follow suit. We need to come down dramatically. We need a lot more than 225 points. I think a good 4 or 5% down here. So,
what are you expecting on Thursday in South Africa, given that the Fed is going to make their decision on Wednesday?
I hope they change their minds. I hope the Fed is 50, and I hope we're more than 25. Because I think that in South Africa, I'm in the camp that we need growth. We really need something to kickstart this economy. And it is almost, in my view, tokenism. And I think sometimes the Reserve Bank needs to be a little bold in understanding what the underlying economy is doing. We need it, Alec. We need it here. And you pick it up in the results. I know that markets are running ahead and share prices are picking up, but that's one part of the equation. The other part is the actual real economy, where people are under huge pressure in terms of just making ends meet. So I'm hoping that the Reserve Bank's a little bold and goes beyond just 0.25%.
We had the first BizNews investment conference on Thursday. We did have Piet Viljoen and Sy Jacobs, and their message was very clear. It was, watch out in the United States. There are certain stocks there that are very toppy, but South Africa is offering great value, and particularly what they call small and mid-caps. Maybe you can just unpack what that means, small and mid-caps, and then indeed, if there are any views of theirs that you would share.
I think we're all going to benefit. I don't share the view that America is going to come down, because you will find the market continuing upward, even though you might find a derating, if I can explain that. It means that a lot of these companies, the tech companies that have led the way, and I think are still going to be relevant for the next decade, simply because they have so much power and so much money. What might happen, Alec, is that they might not increase at the same pace that they have, but I don't think they're going to fall over. And I think where Pitt and Sy are right, yes, there will be a shift towards other businesses that will catch up. But you've got to know which other businesses are going to catch up, because things have changed from COVID. Just to give you a view on that, without taking up too much time in this conversation, American beer sales were down to a 43-year low. And why? Because habits have changed. So before we start making predictions, we've got to understand how things have changed in the world and which companies are now going to benefit. This could be a subject of a whole discussion. So you've got to be very careful where you put that money if you're taking it away from tech. From our point of view, the one thing that has held us back here in this market has been, number one, that we're still very heavily reliant on a lot of our offshore businesses. But the one area that I'm starting to look for the turnaround, and it might be premature, is on the commodity side. And I think that's going to be the one area that's going to surprise us on the upside. We've been dragged down by China. We've been dragged down by concerns about global growth. But Alec, if you look today, even today, platinum shares all of a sudden from the very low levels are going up. And I say, hold on a sec. Platinum price not doing much. Why are these shares going up so fast? Why is the smart money coming in? And I think that's going to be one of our surprise factors, is going to be on the commodity side. I might be too early, but I'm looking for the signs of what can drive our market. And I think it's going to come from that area.
Now, that's so interesting you make a point of that, because Sy Jacobs disclosed to us that he has started buying platinum shares on the strength of the first person blinking, which was Sibanye-Stillwater, who cut 200,000 ounces off the Stillwater production last week. And he said it's been like all of the platinum companies have been looking at each other and seeing the prices fall, but nobody has reacted and cut their output to improve the price. And he says that he saw this as a big thing last week. He took that as a signal. And interesting, the point you make about the platinum shares. Today, Anglo Platinum up again And we're seeing some of the other precious metal stocks going too. So are you nibbling in there, David, given that these shares are down at multi-year lows?
I haven't started yet. I still think there's plenty of time to make that decision. I think that what will happen, if I looked at China today, the numbers coming out of there are really poor. And that economy is a bit slowing down. But I think we're going to see stimulus coming there. I think the authorities there, the government there has to do something. And I think once the market gets a whiff of that and it starts coming through, the iron ore price, which is in the low 90s now, which is a very low level. It's normally a level from which it bounces. We're talking about platinum copper. Remember when BHP made the bid for Anglo's? Copper was 11,000. It's now down in the 9,000s, early 9,000s. So I think all of these things will come right in a global economy that is starting to pick up. And Ali, you said markets are made of swings and roundabouts and ups and downs. No one rings the bell and says to you, phones you up and Alec and says, Alec, I think it's time for you to buy. It happens so fast. You know what I mean? And it happens with immense speed. So you've got to be, when you start to see these signals, then you've got to make the commitment. And I'm very bullish for the next couple of months. Next couple of months starting and then into 2025.
I can remember there were times in our journey where I used to call David the Raging Bull, and named after a movie that was quite popular at the time starring Robert De Niro. Well, he was about as close to a raging bull on South African shares as you can imagine in that conversation today. You can get the full interview. It runs for, well, at least double from the time that we've just listened to. On Biz News Radio or Biz News TV. So that'll be up at 5:30 this evening. We wanted to give the first bite to the Biz News briefing, of course. A couple of points just to pick up on there. At the Biz News conference last Thursday, Sean Pesh, who was out from the UK, recommended a stock called Molson Coors. Now, the share price, Molson Coors is a beer company, and the share price is down 11% this year. Sean, being one of the best asset managers in the world, is on the lookout always for special situations and for very cheap companies or companies whose shares are very cheap. And in this case, what makes it more interesting for South Africans is that Molson Coors is run by mostly a top management from the old SAB Miller. It used to be part of SAB Miller. In fact, you might recall Miller Lite, a very popular beer, which was part of SAB Miller. They had to sell it off, and indeed had to sell off the whole of Molson Coors when the deal was done with the Brazilians. And as a consequence of that, SAB Miller might be no more, but the spirit lives on in this North American company. It is one definitely to go and have a look at. And Si Jacobs, who was referred to a few times in that program, is one of the top money managers in South Africa. He's the co-founder of 361 Asset Management and a man who graces us with his presence at most Biz News conferences. And sure, are we glad that he does. Talking about the conference, the weekly conversation, the Sunday show, as they call it, between my colleague Chris Dane and the inimitable political commentator Neil De Beer, who is a politician himself, the president, I think it is, or chairman anyway, the leader of the United Independent Movement, have a lot to talk about. And indeed, they were both at the conference on Thursday and spent the full day there. Now, that is one of the most popular videos that you can look at on Biz News TV on YouTube, unlike this, which is audio only. That one has got pictures all the way through. But they've introduced a new concept of the dud of the week and the hero of the week. Now, I'm not going to tell you who Neil says the dud is, but the hero was one of our most popular presenters of keynotes at the Biz News conference. And I think you're going to find Neil's thought on this rather interesting.
Of the week, Neil.
Chris, we met
Mtetu Nyati. Now people will go, If you don't know who Mtetu Nyati is, he is the current chairman of the board of Eskom. And I think today, Chris, we've just gone over 170 days without load shedding. So this week at the BizNew Investment Conference, where you and I attended in glory, we meet Mtetu Nyati. Now, this man was kind of, I think, for a lot of people, in the shadows. You don't speak much of Mtetu Nyati, but the revelation in person that this man gave about the changes that he and the board, and a very humble man, takes no credit, doesn't want to be in the media, but sat there for an hour telling us why there is now success at Eskom. This man, by the way, has a legacy that speaks for itself. He worked for Bulfinter's group, Altron, and he changed that company in 2 years. He was, and that's where I met him, the leader of Microsoft in South Africa. So when I was busy at the African Union building up a system for the economic change of the continent, we dealt with Mtetu Nyati as support system to our IT. And to see him now sit there, not taking one singular credit. But Chris, there's two things that absolutely blew me away. One a bit controversial, and the other one a very clear statement. He said, number one, what changed Eskom was the change of leadership taking responsibility. Leadership. And leadership at every level at Eskom had to be changed. So he said, what changed Eskom was not just looking at the power generation system, the power plants, and having to upgrade and maintain, but to put in the right leaders. When he was asked about André De Ruyter, he did not say much, but there was one thing he did say, that if André De Ruyter today had to reapply for the CEO-ship of Eskom, that in no way André would make the cut. That was very interesting to me. And when he was pulsed to say more, he said, rather not. So very interesting. But the fact that this man has taken on a job which he did not have to, and by the way, he told us that he did not want to take, when he got the call from the president on the way there, he was thinking about 5 or 6 excuses to say, no, thank you. But this man decided that it is in his character, I think, Chris, to take something which is broken and the challenge to fix it. Well, currently, touch wood, he has done so. And the great news that in the near future, we will have an oversupply of power is even greater. And then he was asked, if we now get the supply right, what's next? And he said, well, obviously, once we've got supply, we then have to look at the cost of energy and we have to make it cheaper. So definitely, in my opinion, Mtetu Nyati, you are the star of the week.
No doubt. I mixed with many of the 190 delegates who were at the what we call BNIC1. It was the first investment conference. And most of them said that he was the man that they would have traveled far to come and see. The chairman of Eskom was very impressive. We gave a little bit of background, and as you heard there from Neil De Beer, he has a fantastic pedigree. He was brought in by the Fenter family, who owned, built, and ran Altron since 1965. And the late Robbie Fenter passed over the baton to the person that both he and his father, Bill, hand-selected. And that's Mtetu Nyati, a humble man, a very forthright individual, and a very clear thinker. And let's listen now to a highlight from his conversation or his keynote address to the BizNews conference. He, in this instance, picks up, if you like, on that topic of leadership and indeed how things have changed and why we're now into 174 days without load shedding and possibly, just possibly, we will continue through until March next year, which is within the plan at Eskom. That's the time when the current board believes that load shedding will be something of the past. Not just yet, but, we haven't had it for a while, so with a little bit of luck, Who knows? We might just get it all the way. Here's Mteto Nyati.
Some of you may remember when the president had that U.S. and the U.K. trip. And it was being consistently at stage 6 load shedding. And all of us in South Africa said, what the hell is this president of ours doing, going out there having a good time whilst we're having load shedding here? So there was a lot of pressure from all of us in South Africa and say, he must come back and start to deal with this problem. So he cut his visit short. And he came back here. He landed on a Thursday. The following day, I got a call. The president, of course, is not my friend. So when you get a call, you realize that must have something to do with the fact that there's this load shedding and why he cut his trip short. You had to create some scenarios in your own head. And I realized that I'm sure he wants me for something. And I'm going to say no to that thing. Whatever that thing, if he is saying, I'm going to say no, but I need to say no in a way that is respectful. He made a mistake by saying, can we meet the following day? So we met the following day. Indeed, during the meeting, he confirmed what I thought, which was really, he wanted me to run Eskom, to replace Andre. So I, of course, already had played all of this in my head and actually also believed that it was going to be a wrong thing for him to be changing Andre. You know, so I convinced him that, look, I don't think this is the right direction. We need people who could support Andre. The fact that the problems are appearing whilst Andre is there does not mean that he is the person who created those problems. So anyway, the good thing is that he listened and he got it. And that's how I ended up on the board there. So I truly believed then that Andre was the right person for the job. And I joined the board to be part of the people that support him. When Andre left, one of the things that he made clear is that there were too many cooks in the kitchen. And he resigned due to Pravin Gordhan and the new board. That new board is talking about actually us. The board that was appointed in October 2022. So he's talking about us. I was this person who was saying we need to keep Andre and we need to support him. And that's the orientation of the board. And it's a board of, I would say, really, really competent individuals. None of them had raised their hands and said, hey, I want to sit on the Eskom board. In fact, many of them had their own things that they were doing, just like me, which they're focusing on. But many of them were asked. They were asked to come and help. And we've got a fair amount of engineers there, you know, and probably possibly 6 or 7 engineers. We've got CAs there. We've got psychologists there. We've got, you know, we've got unionists there. All of these are key people. This is so important as we think about these state-owned enterprises going forward. We really do need to find people that can first have got a deep understanding of whatever entity that they are being asked to oversee and can add value to that. At the same time, can also hold management accountable. I'm quite pleased, I'm honored to actually be leading a group of people that are so competent and committed to South Africa and committed to turning around this entity of ours. One of our first tasks, of course, was to get somebody who's going to replace Andre. And we managed to find the gentleman, Dan Marokan. He's a chemical engineer. That's his junior degree. And his master's degree is a petroleum engineer from the UK. It's a great, great guy. I mentioned this point down here that the DA rejected our choice, who is Dan Marokan. You know, he said that he does not inspire confidence. It's like, how did you come to that conclusion? What is it that you used to come to that conclusion? Did you just look at his face? or maybe look at his weight or what? How did you come to that conclusion? This is the world that we're living in. To me, that point is not really about Dan as well. That point is also about the board, that these stupid fellows, these people have decided to go and find somebody who's not inspiring. It's actually a vote of no confidence on that board as well. So I'm just saying, this is the reality that we've been operating under. None of us wanted these jobs. All of us were doing this thing for our country, which is South Africa.
What a wonderful presentation we had from the chairman of Eskom. And well, it gives you, it instills all kinds of confidence in where the future of the country is going. Interestingly enough, a couple of our heavyweight asset managers who presented their keynotes there, Piet Viljoen from ReCM and Cy Jacobs, as earlier mentioned earlier, from 361, were both very bullish on South Africa as a consequence of two things: the sustainability of the government of national unity and the turnaround in Eskom. It was so interesting to hear the man who'd engineered that turnaround telling us that the reason for that is the board, is the leadership. Six or seven engineers, as you heard there, on the board of Eskom. And the balance of the people who are there, most of them have actually worked at the organization before. That is a universe away from the board that the Guptas had. There was perhaps a purpose in the plundering that they employed during that period. And yet some people still vote for a return to those awful days. Can't believe it. Back to markets now, and we close off the show with a final interview from our partners at the Bloomberg New York operation, because this is really the week where things can start moving in the right direction, as you heard from David Shapiro. That is, of course, if you are long or if you own shares, and most people have shares in their portfolios, either unit trusts or indeed just the retirement portfolios. The big news on Wednesday will be, by how much is the US Federal Reserve going to cut interest rates? It isn't a question of interest rates staying unchanged. They are going to be cut. Here in South Africa, we have our Monetary Policy Committee meeting on the following day, on the Thursday. And there are hopes that there will be an interest rate cut here as well, because this economy certainly needs some boosting. But let's join our partners now at Bloomberg and get an understanding of the way that the international community are looking at a potential interest rate cut on Wednesday. And the impact thereof, remember, is to stimulate the economy and to help share prices. Listen closely.
All right, let's get back to the markets here. So equities continue to roll over. Bond market, quite interesting. You had a sell-off right when those CPI numbers hit. You had a spike in the two-year yield. And then once the cash market opened for the equity market, bonds continued to really roll over with yields moving significantly lower now. Ira Jersey, Bloomberg Intelligence Chief U.S. Interest Rate Strategist, joins us. I shouldn't say significantly lower, but compared to where they were, it was quite a move. What are we making of the move today?
Yeah, so you know, after the CPI report came out, the market was thinking, oh, well, maybe the Fed is less likely to do a 50 basis point rate cut next week, and so we're going to readjust that front end yields. Once the equity started to roll over, you also have seen a pretty big rally in European rates this morning, our time and afternoon their time, and I think that Treasuries have a flight to quality bid from the risk off in the U.S. markets, but also are being pulled down a little bit by the global rate environment as well. So again, not huge moves on a day-on-day basis, but like you said, Alex, the fact that we were off by 6 basis points in two-year yields, and then now we're essentially unchanged. I think that's meaningful enough that the market is not 100% sure right now, and certainly we're not priced for just the 25 basis point cut next week.
So, how do you think our friends at the Federal Reserve will read this inflation data today?
Yeah, so our view is that this solidified the idea that a 25 basis point rate cut is in the cards. You know, again, 50 is not impossible, and certainly the market doesn't think so either. But at the same time, you know, a 0.2% inflation print is still above the Fed's target. So even though they want to cut interest rates because they're worried that the economy is starting to slip, and you know, certainly they've been focused more on employment than inflation in recent months. That they can start a slow rate cut cycle. I know some houses on the street think that they could go 25 and then 50 basis points for a couple of meetings thereafter. I suspect at the end of the day, they're going to go 25 basis points at every meeting. So the market maybe has gotten a little bit ahead of itself when you look at pricing for, say, January Fed funds futures or even two-year yields for that matter.
Yeah, so it seemed like what happened is once they got the print that 50 basis point potential cut moved more to December rather than pricing it out. It just kind of pushed it off a little bit. Does that need to be pushed out even more, and or is it just taken out altogether?
Well, I think as a base case, and the way that I'm thinking about how the economy might develop and then what the Fed's reaction function and therefore the Treasury market's reaction function to that new economic news is that the economy is going to continue to slow, but not very quickly. So therefore, the Federal Reserve will be able to be patient and go in 25 basis point increments. And then maybe at some point it might do a 50, but I don't think that the Fed necessarily wants to, because, and certainly as a first, and we've been saying this for months now, is that if the Federal Reserve were to start with a 50 basis point rate cut, you know, that would be like a shock and awe kind of event, and the I think that would show the market and Main Street businesses and households that the Fed's panicked and they see something maybe that's much weaker than most of the economic data that's coming in suggests. So I think that would show some panic. And that's another reason to think, hey, they'll go 25s unless and until you wind up having, you know, negative payroll print or even $50,000 payroll print would be enough for them to say, hey, the economy's, you know, not growing anywhere near potential. So we really have to cut interest rates significantly. But until we get to that point in the data, I think that the Fed's going to go 25 basis points. And, you know, look, this is all like short-term interest rate trader minutia, quite frankly. And I think for the broader markets, you have to say, okay, the Fed's in easing mode. The question is how fast and how far, not necessarily are they going to be cutting rates.
Ira, about 30 seconds left here. The election, the Treasury market. I don't think I heard the yield curve mentioned last night at the debate, but how do you guys frame out kind of the political risks here?
Yeah, so we put out a note on what we thought the big impactful things for the Treasury market will be based on the election. Most of those are not expecting a big reaction on election day one way or the other, but nuanced things like who's the next Fed chair going to be? That's going to matter. If President Trump wins election again, it won't be Powell. Maybe for Kamala Harris, it will be Powell. And if not, it will probably be someone else who was maybe a Biden appointee to the Fed. So those are the types of things that matter. And then, of course, things like budget deficits. Neither of these candidates is likely to be a deficit hawk. So therefore, you're likely to continue with relatively large budget deficits. And that obviously has an effect on pricing in the Treasury market.
Great to catch up with you, Ira.
Fascinating stuff, isn't it? When you listen to the way that the Americans get so caught up in the stories and the things that are going to happen and seem to speak at twice the speed of a normal people. And let's close off by having a look at the markets and how they performed today. It was very quiet on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange as far as overall price movements are concerned. The All Share Index started off okay, got a little bit stronger, peaked at around 4 o'clock and then eased back to finish the day virtually unchanged. It was 28 points on 82,000, so it gives you an idea. That's on the All Share Index. The Rand was about 0.5% stronger against the US dollar, 17 Rand and 64 cents. The gold price is relatively unchanged at the moment, to just coming towards $2,600 per ounce. And the oil price, the Brent crude, is at $72.50. Bitcoin down by 3% today at 57,806. As far as the individual shares are concerned, we had a very good day for a company called Finbond, which was up by 10.75%. I looked into it. There was a SENS report, and Finbond owns an American company which owns 90% now of a micro lender, a company called AmeriCash Holdings and CreditBox.com, which grants loans of up to $2,500 both online and in South Carolina, Wisconsin, and Missouri. Indeed, they got something like 185 outlets in North America, 418 of them in South Africa as well. So Finbond up by nearly, 10.75% on the news that it had bought an extra 28% of that American micro lender, and it had only paid $1.6 million, which I say only because the whole business is supposedly worth $28 million. Okay, interesting stuff, and I suppose nice work if you can have it. As far as the rest, Life Healthcare was 8% higher, a nice improvement for the retailer Choppies, which is based, I think, in Botswana. That was up by 7%. Quantum was up 7%. On the way down, Lesaka, one of our favorites, was down 6% today. That is a company that is doing very well. It's the one of the leading fintechs in South Africa. It is reacting, no doubt, to what happened in the results last week. Clientele Life down by 8.5% and Huge down by 9%. But those stocks do bump around the place, all over the place. So nothing really to worry too much about as far as that's concerned. Looking at some of the biggest stocks on the JSE, you can see that the financial shares were virtually unchanged. Industrials were down by 0.5%, and resources were up by 1%. I hope you've enjoyed being with us on this brand new show of ours. We'll be back again, same time, same place tomorrow. If you want to listen to us live, it's at 5 o'clock on the BizNews TV channel on YouTube, where you can put your comments in and we will put them onto the live stream chat. It's also on my Twitter feed or X feed. That's at Alec Hogg. Go there and you'll be able to pick it up as well. Also on Alec Hogg ZA Facebook page and the Alec Hogg LinkedIn page. The audience of around 300,000 potentially who could be listening into this show. So why not join them? Until the next time, I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews. Cheerio.